for the public. The fact is that the NUJ is the only thing that journalists have got at the moment to try and preserve for the future, not just our jobs, our pay, and the conditions we work under, but also the standards of journalism. Now, a lot of the work that we've been doing with this Commission of Inquiry, which has been sending questionnaires around the country, sending people around to talk to people, finding out the most horrendous things that are going on in a lot of offices, for example, where newspapers or broadcasting organisations have started websites. A reporter writes a story. The story goes straight up on the website, and a copy of it goes to the subs, to sub for the newspaper. In other words, raw copy, unsubbed, is going up on the website. No wonder the public are losing confidence in the standards of journalism, the reliability of the internet. Now, we all go for the internet all the time. I mean, the internet is the best thing that has happened, in my opinion, in the last 100 years. Certainly, in my lifetime as a working journalist, which is, well, 40-something years, Google is the best thing that's happened, because I can find out anything in 10 seconds. Well, Google also means that no longer has any journalist got an excuse to get anything wrong, because you can check anything in 10 seconds. But can you rely on the information? The point about the internet is that anything could be copied and loaded onto another site in seconds, just like that. The freelancers here, the meeting we had before you all students came here tonight, worried about the lifting of pictures. But likewise, the syndication of pictures onto other websites without getting paid for their work. There's that side of it. There's also the professional side of it. That the number of stories that you can just highlight, copy and paste from a website into your story, someone else picked it up, someone else picked it up. It is a recipe for lowering the standards of journalism. You've got a lot of publications to save money taking what they call citizen journalism, in other words, amateur journalism, at a time when we're all professionals or studying to be professionals. We've got papers and websites cutting their spending so they're not paying journalists to produce stuff properly. We've got a huge expansion of public relations where publications are putting press releases unedited into newspapers because the journalists haven't got the time, they haven't got the staff, and the journalists haven't got the time to even stop them, let alone phone someone to get a reaction, get another point of view for the story. Now, this is a crisis. We don't like talking particularly about a crisis, and it's a difficult time. But we should, because it's something that we all have to stand together to do something about. Now, the reason that we were in Manchester today was because there was a meeting there of the Society of Editors, which is the national organisation of editors from all media. There are 250 top national editors there. Now, the General Secretary of the NUJ, that's the leader of the NUJ, a man called Jeremy Deer, had asked to go in and speak to the editors to express our concerns, not in a confrontational sort of way, but to say that we as journalists want to work together with the editors and the owners to ensure that in this uncertain new environment, we want to work together to maintain the standards of journalism, to be able to maintain our obligation to provide good journalism for the public. And the Society of Editors wouldn't have him in. Incidentally, we learnt that on the agenda of the Society of Editors conference today, they had a speech by the head of MI5. Why they wanted to hear MI5 rather than a representative of their own journalists, I don't know. But the result was that we were effectively in the position of having to present ourselves confrontationally to the editors, which is not something we want to do, because we want to work together. The trouble is that editors are basically managers who represent the owners and the owners of the media at the moment, their sole concern is to try and maintain the level of money they're making out of existing media at a time when advertising is going and sales are falling, and are trying to get new media to do absolutely everything without paying for it properly and training people properly. I mean, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that the state that owners and editors are in at the moment is a state of panic. They don't really understand technology. They know that it can do all these different things. They know that on a website you can have video and audio and blogs and chat rooms, bulletin boards, discussion groups and everything. So they say, well, we've got to do them. So lots of places, the publishers are putting stuff up on websites that no one's reading, no one's interested in. Good example. The Daily Telegraph. The Daily Telegraph, which is the paper where they had the biggest changes over the last year, they produce a thing called Click and Carry. Have you read about Click and Carry? At 4 p.m. every afternoon, the Telegraph journalists who are spinning around in circles trying to do blogs and podcasts and vidcasts for their website, as well as trying to get stuff written for the paper, have to produce pages for this online newspaper, which comes out as PDFs, which people are supposed to print out at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's like an early evening newspaper, mostly business news. And the last figures I saw, there were 4,112 people were actually using this service now, and that's got hundreds of highly paid expert journalists spending time doing it. In other words, the bosses haven't got a clue what to do. And to be honest, the NUJ is not sure what's going to happen. Nobody's sure what's going to happen. But we are looking at it. We are asking people. We are asking around. We are taking a considered opinion of it. So, I mean, I don't know if we're going to have time for a discussion on these things, because I think this is an absolutely rivetingly interesting time for journalism. You know, this is a time the journalists have really got to prove their mettle. It's a time we've really got to show that in all the stuff that there is on the internet, all thousands, millions of pages of information, where people are starting to get news on non-news sites, where the aggregators are putting, you know, summaries of news from other sources on search pages, and people aren't going, aren't wanting to go to news sites. At that time, while this is going on, journalists have got to establish that we are the people who are providing reliable information, that if people want proper news, reliable, accurate, authoritative and independent news, they've got to go to sites where journalists are doing it, and then we've got to persuade employers to run those sites and to pay us, train us and employ us properly to do it. So it's quite a task. But it's a task worth doing, because as I said before, if we don't, then we might as well pack in journalism. It's a great task for the 21st century for journalists to do, and it's one that I'm sure we're all equal to. Now, I was actually asked to come along to talk about the NUJ history. So, I'm sorry, but I'm supposed
that
to...
That is part of now, you know what I mean?
To talk about, I've talked about the last 100 years by talking about the next 100. But a little bit about history, because I just want to say that Nottingham features quite a bit in this book, which is £10, by the way, cut price. It's £10 copy. And Nottingham was the scene of one of the very big stories of the last century. And funnily enough, it's about technology. It's about the last round of major technological change before the digital one that we're all in now. And this was the computer revolution, when computers started being used for setting type and producing newspapers in the 1970s. And in 1978, in fact over the winter of 1978 to 1979, the NUJ had its biggest ever strike, when 9,000 journalists, all the provincial newspapers, all the local regional newspapers in England and Wales, and Scotland were out on strike for 7 weeks in a very cold winter. This was overpay. This was at a time of very high inflation and government wage control, and the government, the NUJ managed to bust the government's wage control, imagine that. And they turned a 5% offer into a 14% pay rise, so that was a great triumph. But one of the results of that dispute was that the journalists on the Nottingham Evening Post here all lost their jobs, because at that time it had an even more anti-union ownership than it does now, which was a local company called T. Bailey Foreman, headed by an extraordinary man called Christopher Paul Carew. I don't know if that name means anything to anybody. He was a sheriff of Nottingham. High sheriff of Nottinghamshire. Alistair was in the strike, if you remember it. He used to parade around in a silk cravat and gaiters and everything to the Queen. And he was the owner of this company. He later went to work for Rupert Murdoch in Wapping, by the way. And he was the owner of this company, and he said, any journalists who join a strike are going to be sacked. And they were, 28 of them. And at the end of the strike, the rest of the union had a big argument about this, because some people said, we can't go back to work while Nottingham journalists have been sacked and not put back, reinstated, not given their jobs back. And others said, but if we don't go back to work because they've won this pay rise, then if we stay out on strike, then people are going to go back anyway. And the awful result of that was that the other offices all went back to work, and instead the union put all its energies and resources it could into the Nottingham strike, which went on for 7 years. Was it 7 years before there was a sack? It's 7 years. And there were amazing scenes. Their office was down in Foreman Street.
Square.
Yeah. I came up to a few. Every Saturday, there used to be a demonstration outside the office, which were quite violently attacked by police. It was the most extraordinary scenes. Nothing like it has really happened since. It was quite a really violent confrontation. This was a time when there was a lot of that in Britain. You might have read the phrase, the winter of discontent, which was the winter of 1978 to 1979, when there were a lot of strikes around the country, mostly by low-paid public service workers who were also taking action against the government's wage restrictions, the same ones that... the newspaper strike was the NUJ contribution to the winter of discontent. And the strike in Nottingham, which was a kind of heroic thing for the union. The Nottingham journalists became heroes in the union and used to come to conferences, and everybody applauded them for their courage, because they fought a great fight. They produced their own weekly paper called the Nottingham News, which ran for 3 or 4 years. One of the stars of the Nottingham News was Brian Clough, the great football manager, who was then manager of Notts Forest, which in those days was the equivalent of the Premier League. And in fact, in that very year, 1979, astounded the football world by winning the European Cup. They won the European Cup, which was what Champions League is now. And Brian Clough, I'm sure people have heard of Brian Clough, he was one of the great football managers. He refused to talk to the Nottingham Evening Post while the dispute was on, and he took a column. He wrote an exclusive weekly column in the Nottingham News, the paper produced by the striking journalists. And so much authority did Brian Clough have that Notts County as well were obliged to boycott the Nottingham Evening Post and work with the Nottingham News. So, I mean, it was a big thing at the time. It was a big thing in Nottingham. And one of the great things in the NUJ story, and it's all in that book, which is £10. But that's more than enough for me. I'm just really pleased to have a chance to talk to people about what an exciting time it is now, and what a great prospect there is for the NUJ, for people to join it, and to preserve and develop our profession in the 21st century. And I don't know if we've got...